John Batchelor. From the surface of the planet Earth, we're headed to Earth orbit, Starlink, and SpaceX. Bob Zimmerman is here. He keeps the website Behind the Black. Starlink is a proprietary company started by SpaceX, now independent, and it has some, I believe, 100 million, some huge number of customers. I'm one of them. It's extremely useful in a storm in New England. Very useful. When the power goes down or there's questions of the hardline internet, and if you must have it, you have Starlink. Bob, there's more good news from SpaceX. What is it?
Yes. Late last week, SpaceX completed its 70th launch of 2023. It put up another 22 Starlink satellites. They've got something like 1,500 operating satellites in orbit right now, something like that. The number fluctuates a great deal because new satellites go up, old satellites fall to the ground, some are operational, some are not, but it's about 1,500, and they have something more than a million customers, I understand, right now, including you, John.
Yes.
What made this launch so significant, because they do this now, like, they're doing 10 to 11 launches a month, so it's not the launch itself that's the news. What's the news is the number, 70th launch in 2023. That's in just a little over three-quarters of the year, SpaceX has completed 70 launches. And to give some context and a bigger look to that number, let's have some history. In 1966, during the height of the space race, the United States completed 70 launches in that year, that whole year. And that number, in 70 launches in 1966, was the record for the most launches the United States completed in a full year until last year, when that number was finally superseded. SpaceX this year has now matched that number in just over three quarters of a year, which means their goal of reaching 100 launches this year is not out of reach, not at all. It's very much in reach, though it's going to be tough. And it just gives you an idea of how incredible the results are when you allow freedom and private enterprise to function, making money, and don't get in its way. And that's the reason this launch is a significant, John.
Northrop Grumman, this is big space in the old days. The headline is that it's abandoning its proposed space station. It looks like, Bob, it's calculating because it's partnering with Voyager Starlab. What is that?
Yes, this is part of NASA's deal with four different consortiums or corporations, space companies, to build each of them to build their own independent private commercial space station to replace ISS. Northrop Grumman was one of those four. Voyager Space was another. Grumman, though, for reasons of its own, and it's not clear why, has decided to abandon its proposed space station. It's not going to build its own station. Instead, it's going to join up with Voyager Starlab, which means of the four contracts that NASA has put together to launch space stations, it now only has three space stations of those contracts because Northrop Grumman is going to join Starlab. And more important, Grumman doesn't appear to want to have to commit to building a lot of stuff because what it's doing in that partnership is it's going to provide the Starlab station with cargo ferrying capabilities using its Cygnus freighter. It's the same kit freighter it now uses to bring supplies to ISS. They're going to upgrade it so that rather than being berthed by a robot arm on this new station, it will dock directly like Dragon and Progress and Soyuz capsules do. But nonetheless, so Northrop Grumman is now becoming, this had been rumored. We talked about this last week, but now it's confirmed that Northrop Grumman is going to do this. This isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's just indicative of the unstable situation now with new private commercial space stations. We're at the very beginning of a new product, and when something's this new, there's always a lot of shuffling and rearrangement going on, and that's just part of the game.
Bob, this is a puzzler. Axiom and Prada about a spacesuit. I don't know what to think about this. Space is something where, well, you know, growing up reading science fiction, it's a job. It's a mechanical job. It's like Gasoline Alley. I don't think of my space heroes as well-dressed. Do you?
No, I don't either, but there's many components to this. So Axiom has a contract with NASA to build this moon suit that will eventually be used on Artemis. And at the same time, all that contract is also to upgrade those suits to be able to be used as space suits in spacewalks as well. And so Axiom is building the space suits as part of this $228 million contract. There's no reason why Axiom cannot partner with other companies to make the job better and also to get some nice publicity. So signing up Prada, an Italian fashion company, to help design the outer layer of the spacesuit, there's some sense to this, and there's two reasons why it makes sense. First of all, you get lots of publicity because everyone who likes fashion and fancy clothes is going to know Prada and going to say, holy moly, they're going to make a spacesuit? So that attracts a lot of publicity, and that's good. The second reason they're doing it is because Prada actually has a great deal of technical experience with high-tech fabrics, including composites. This is what something Axiom discovered in the talking to the company at a conference. And they decided, hey, this actually makes some sense. You can bring some actual value to this suit and help us get the suit built right. And that outer layer will then also be fashionable as well. And so that's why this deal is made. And it just makes sense. It's private enterprise. You know, you don't tell the government. Government's not telling these companies what to do. The government's always very conservative, so it would probably say, you can't do this. This is too risky, too weird. And the private company's saying, no, this sounds weird and fun. Let's do it. And that's what's happened.
It worries me. I just mentioned, okay? It worries me.
You're from the government, John. You're here to help.
We go to the government itself, NASA awarding a contract. This is the cool stuff in space, monetizing orbit. Tug Company, what's it do, Bob?
Yes, the company is named Starfish Space. This was part of a bunch of contracts NASA issued. We talked about earlier NASA issuing a contract to the Japanese company, which is establishing an American facility, them to do a mission to inspect and rendezvous with defunct material in space. Well, this is the same contract as Starfish. They have a orbital tug they call ATA. And so NASA's awarded them a small study contract. It's not a lot of money, but it's a small study contract to also see whether or not the ATA orbital tug could rendezvous and inspect defunct orbital material debris as well. The reason they want to study this and do it from two different directions, two different companies, is because a defunct upper stage that's in orbit does not have any kind of GPS or location equipment upon it. So any tug has to find it by other means. They cannot actually home in and lock onto any kind of signal. They've got to use ground-based orbital imagery or other things to find it. And that's technical engineering that needs to be developed, and that's what this contract's about. But it's another, this NASA is not doing it. It's getting multiple private companies to do it for it, and that's a good thing.
And we move to the other side of the world, China, growing its space station. Is it manned right now, Bob? Do they have people up there?
Yes. They are now in full-time crew rotations. They completed their first crew rotation of I think about 2 months ago, and so there's a new crew up there. The next crew is up there, and they'll continue to do rotations from now on, and hopefully they plan to do it forever. And this is working so well for them that the Chinese government has agreed to allow the Chinese space industry, or I should say program, and agencies that run it, to expand the station. Tiangong 2 is going to be doubled in size, quite literally. I have a diagram on Behind the Black so you can get an idea of what a president looks like. It's presently kind of shaped like a T with a central set of modules and then two set of modules moving off to either side. They're going to duplicate that and add it to the end so that the thing will be like two crosses, essentially. And that's their plan. It still will be about a third the size of ISS, but that's not a big deal because ISS is going away and the new commercial stations that are going to replace it are all going to be I'd say comparable in size to Tiangong 2. You just have many of them. And this part, China's also going to add inflatable modules to the station, as well as attachment points to allow external experiments. They're just thinking long term. They want to be in this game, John.
Anything you can do, I can do better. Have you noticed
He's keeping up with the Joneses.
Yes.
Exactly.
Have you noticed that China doesn't do original, it does copycat? Have you noticed that?
Yes. Yes. I should point out that this station is essentially an upgraded version of Russia's Mir station, but they have the resources to keep it going instead of going bankrupt like Russia has.
We turn to a better idea, reusable booster. Now it comes to Japan, raising the question one more time, Bob, why hasn't NASA taken to reusables?
NASA did do reusables, John. Are you forgetting something called the Space Shuttle? And that was back in the 1970s. But NASA is not, we don't want NASA to do anything. We want NASA to buy the product from private enterprise. I don't want NASA to do anything. So this story from Japan is a great example of doing it wrong, because Japan's space agency, JAXA, is now studying new reusable rocket concepts. They have no rocket right now that can put anything into orbit. They've retired their H-2A rocket. And their H-3 new rocket failed on its first launch attempt, and there's no scheduled next launch. We don't know when it's going to launch again because they have to figure out the problem. So they can't put anything into orbit. They have another rocket called Epsilon. It has also failed in its last launch, and they have not announced a new launch date. But the JAXA Space Agency is going to now study designing its own reusable rocket, which they hope to launch sometime in the 30s, more than a decade from now. And this is the wrong approach. This is where Japan has a problem, because they don't seem to be able to transfer responsibility and control to private enterprise competing. They instead want the government to run everything, and the result is they have nothing right now, and that's their problem. It is interesting, John. They're now studying the idea of reusable rockets as if it's a revolutionary idea, but now SpaceX has been doing it routinely now for 8 years. And has landed a first stage more than 200 times. This is not a new idea anymore. To just now be thinking about doing it indicates once again why you don't want the government to be deciding these things.
If NASA had reusable, it wouldn't cost how many billions every time they launch SLS?
Yeah, because they had a reusable shuttle, but they were never focused on making money. So they didn't care how much it cost to launch, so they never worked at trying to improve and innovate and reduce costs, because profit was not their motive. Well, their motive was producing jobs, government jobs, and that poisons the whole process. SpaceX tries to be reusable, not simply to be reusable and create jobs. It does it so it can reduce its costs, lower its costs, the way it charges, get more customers, and make more money.
I understand that. I'm just looking right at the future. That SLS, they throw it away every time they use it.
They're throwing it away every time they use it. That's right. That's NASA. And it's throwing away shuttle engines that NASA reused more than a dozen to two dozen times, because they're using those engines on each SLS launch and then destroying them. And this is how the government functions.
We go to Artemis Accords, which is now signed by too many states for me to read, but it's a long list, and the Netherlands now signs on. This is protocols for the future.
Yes, and it's telling us where the alliances, space alliances and competitions are going to be, at least a hint of that. Netherlands said it's going to sign. It hasn't actually done it yet, but it said it's going to sign. It'll become the 30th nation to join the American Alliance to explore and settle the solar system. With pretty much the entire Western world signing on to Artemis, it leaves China, Russia, and a few communist allies isolated on the other side. And that basically gives us a sense of where the competition, the Cold War, will be in space. Whether this Cold War will have anything to do with private enterprise and freedom is less clear, because the present Western alliance seems less interested in those concepts. But either way, we now have an idea of what the first few centuries of competition in space are going to be, John.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're headed to the surface of the sun to ask questions. I'm John Bell.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.